Hello and welcome to another live edition of The Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Lorraine Hartnett, who is the founder of the Eucharist Helpers of the Sick. Thank you for joining us today, Lorraine.
Thank you.
We're talking about a really important topic that people really need to wake up and take action on, and that is recently the Judiciary Committee of the Connecticut Legislators took up a bill called an Act Concerning Death with Dignity. Could you explain what this act is?
Yes, I will read to you. An Act Concerning Death with Dignity, to allow a competent, terminally ill patient to self-administer medication to end his or her life after evaluation by physicians and counseling, the passage of a waiting period, and the completion of a formal witness request for such medication, which was introduced by the Judiciary Committee of the Connecticut State Legislature, unfortunately tabled.
Yeah, it was tabled, but it came up very quickly, and it's scary because we found out about it not even a week before it was going to come up to the committee, and that's the time that, you know, people need to come out and talk and get mobilized to stop these types of things, or even get their voices heard on these issues. And it's not dead, it's dead for now, but it will come back and raise its ugly head. What is so compelling? Why should we be so concerned about this in the state of Connecticut?
Because the only one who understands the dignity of your death is God. And hopefully you, when you're going through it, and your family who is with you. So there should be no judicial or legislative involvement in this issue. This is between you and God, period. And the idea that legislation could be passed that would allow a person who is very ill to make a decision to end his or her own life,
right,
is really frightening.
Because, although they say they're quote-unquote competent, until you get into that position, how competent do you think you're really going to be faced with the certainty of death? I mean, we all know we're going to die at some point, but somebody who is terminally ill is going to go through many valleys and peaks. And, are we going to allow them to, people to take their own lives, condone it, as a state?
I understand what you're saying. As a state, as a country, other states have done it. Oregon has a physician-assisted suicide law. It's allowed there.
Right.
Doctors can cooperate. They haven't come down on doctors who don't want to cooperate yet, but that could only be next. The thing that I want to bring out to people is that when death is at your door, you feel very different than you do maybe 2 years before when you're writing your end-of-life requests.
Right, your living will.
Yeah. Yes. So many, many times I have a patient comes in with a living will. And they'll say, I don't want resuscitation, I don't want any machines, I don't want medications, I don't want antibiotics. Well, when the rubber meets the road and you're actually facing death, often the family or the patient changes their mind. And that is because the actual process is there. And you can't make a decision like that way before it happens. And when you're dying, it's just a beautiful process that can only happen with a submission to the whole process.
Right.
So the idea that you can make a decision before that is absurd to me as a physician. As a physician, to assist someone to do something like that is out of the question. To a Catholic physician, it is just unthinkable. And actually, to any person who loves life, this act really deserves their attention.
Right. I mean, how long before, right now it's pretty clear, that it's a competent person that is supposed to be making these decisions, but how long before, the state or the health insurance companies or the families who, don't want to be burdened with loved ones, or the person just even if it's not true, feels that way, that they don't want to burden people with their illness and their dying. You know, how long before people feel pressured to take away that basically precious process of dying
of
away
living.
From your family.
Of living your way into heaven.
Right.
I mean, death is only some that we've made up, right? Death, there's really no death. There's just entrance into eternal life. And that, because the focus is off that,
right?
Then the focus is on death, physical death. If you think that there's nothing else, then your suffering isn't valuable, correct? So that's the kind of world we live in. You know, everything has to be perfect. Everyone has to be perfect. Even your death has to be perfect. So,
and at your own, these like delayed gratification. You know, it's like it's on your own terms. You have
to do
everything.
And there already is pressure.
Right.
Being put on people. And anyone who's been in a hospital recently knows that. The minute you go into a hospital to register for any procedure, the registrar, who is not a medical person, says to you, do you have a living will? Do you have a living will? You're going in to get a bunion taken off your toe. I mean, is this really a time to discuss your death? But that is done.
Wow.
So then a document exists which follows you into the operating room. So you have an anesthesia reaction. You stop breathing. What happens then? Does the doctor follow your
DNR.
Living will? Okay. These are issues that come up every day. The process is alive and dynamic and it's moving towards your eternal life. And once you take off that dynamism of it, then all these issues try to be controlled by whoever can control them.
Right. So, I mean, this is really something we need to stop in its tracks because, like you said, it's insidious and it'll feed into other things. And I think my biggest concern is that as a state or as a society, once we say suicide is okay in this circumstance, then what is that saying to the rest of, you know, like teenagers? You know, everything in a teenager's life is so overblown. You know, I mean, a boy breaks up with a girl. The girl feels it's the end of her life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if society says it's okay for somebody who is dying, you know, to kill themselves, then what is that saying to our teenagers? You know, is there circumstances when it's okay to kill yourself?
Well, it's putting a definition and a decision on something which really isn't your decision. You know, we're in a world which is a world of death, right? The culture of death. It's not a culture of life. We're making the culture of life right here.
Right.
You know, we're alive. We love life. So whether we have a fetus inside a mother's womb or whether we have an old 101-year-old lady I took care of today, you know, who's so beautiful. You know, she says, oh, how do you feel? Oh, I don't feel good. I don't feel good. Of course you don't feel good. You're 101. But she wasn't saying, I want to die.
Right.
She was enjoying the life that she had left. And the problem is we've gotten away from that.
Yeah.
Why would someone want to live if they're alone, if there's no one with them, if there's no one sitting with them, if they don't have people loving them? You can understand how
Absolutely.
That comes into the society. If somebody's living in an apartment all by themselves with no family or family hundreds of miles away and no one cares, no one calls, then suicide seems like an option. So
the choice. We should make it. The choice should be family should be visiting.
Of course.
We should be
course.
Doing more to help people live and die with dignity on God's terms, not on...
Exactly.
On their terms.
Exactly. And isn't that the case with so many of the issues that we deal with?
Absolutely.
In the pro-life movement, right? It's great to say you shouldn't have an abortion, but we'd better be there for that girl. We'd better be there to help her, to have that baby, to support her, to adopt the baby if necessary, in order to help her live. It's the same with this. I think if you have someone who wants to die prematurely, wants to commit suicide, I don't think they can be normal. As a physician, if someone came in to me and said, I want to sign a paper and I want a doctor to help me to inject myself
right.
with poison to kill myself, I wouldn't believe there was something right with them.
Right, right.
That would mean to me that they're not living their right. full human life.
Where's your
life.
Bucket list?
You're right. And I would be, right, I would really be worried about that person's psychological state. So, but we've gotten away from that.
Right. You know, that would be the norm.
Well, yeah. Now we're in the case. Everybody's okay, right? If that's the way you feel, that's okay. That's okay. You feel that way, I feel this way, that's okay. It's not okay. You're right. We have to be there for these people. And that's a whole change in culture. I mean, and that, I know that's how we live.
Yeah.
You know, you have your children. I have my father at home. You know, plenty of people I know are doing that too. You know, not giving up on anybody. And that's what we have to be doing so that people want to live. But unfortunately, we have laws like this that are brought up very, very quickly by people
really quickly.
Who have an agenda. And their agenda is not our agenda. It's a culture of death agenda. It's an anti-Catholic agenda. And we need to know about these things. But of course, they don't want us to know because, mm-hmm. as we proved last week, when that other law was proposed in Connecticut and 5,000 people were on the stairs of the state house and they saw the strength of the Catholic Church, they don't want that.
Right.
So they try to slip these things in. So we have to be very aware. This law is very dangerous because it will change the culture even more. You're right. People will be prodded, pushed in a lot of ways that they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
They may be encouraged by their healthcare providers, by their insurance company. You know, why should your mother live? She's 75 and has multiple sclerosis. Her life isn't worth living. She's in a wheelchair. She can barely move. Why should we give her any more medicine? Let's be compassionate and let her go. And help her. Let's help her go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not letting go. It's pushing her
right,
over.
Right, but they will couch that in the terms of compassion.
The whole thing is that specifically says a competent person. So a competent person who can take pills on their own can kill themselves any way they want to kill themselves. I mean, if they're really competent, they can kill themselves. Why do we have to condone it? Why do we have to be the ones? Why does the state have to, you know, provide them with the means to do it? Why does the doctor have to provide them with the means?
Because they want to make it easy.
It.
They want to make it easy. So it's easy. So you can say to your doctor, I want the pills. Write me a prescription for 50 10 milligram morphine tablets. Okay? Then you're allowed to do that. By the way, that is done in other terms without it actually being legalized. It is something that is done.
But not to competent people so much. Oh, really?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I've never been involved in it.
Right.
But I've heard plenty of stories where people are given prescriptions and stockpile the medicine, and everybody kind of knows what it's for. And doesn't talk about it. You know, to me, if someone came to me like that, I'd send them to the psychiatrist. But again, it's a matter of definition. Who are you sending that person to? Do they have your same values?
Right.
Are you able to talk to them in a reasonable way? Did they have the same ethical structure that you have? No. It's relativism. It's moral relativism, plain and simple. And the person you're sending them to may be someone who'll say they're competent.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I went to school and I was told first do no harm.
Right.
Well, to me, scraping a baby out of a womb or giving someone pills to kill themselves is harm. But that's not everybody feels that way. You know, even some Catholics don't feel that way.
You know, I guess it all comes down to loving people. You know, I mean, if we really loved each other, then, you know, nobody would feel this need to exit early, you know, or if you really, you know, love somebody, you want them, you know, not just to die with dignity, but you want them to get to heaven. I mean, that's the number one thing. So you would do anything to help them get to heaven.
Yes.
And obviously suicide is not the way.
No.
That's clearly not in the guidelines. You're not getting to heaven if you commit suicide.
Well, I think that there's a lot of question about that. And I certainly think that Jesus is would be merciful to those who were mentally ill and did end their lives. The idea that a society would be complicit
in
making legislation to promote it.
Right.
Just like abortion, just like birth control. it's promoted. It's now part of our society, right? Part of our legal system, and we can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
And so this is the first step in a lot of different moves. So you have someone who wants to get pills to kill themselves. Okay? They can stockpile the pills. Now you have this, physician-assisted suicide. You say, why is it necessary for someone who's competent? Well, no, they're talking about someone who maybe they have Lou Gehrig's disease and they can't move. So before they really get totally paralyzed and can't talk, let's have them sign this paper. So when they get to the point where they really can't swallow, then we can just inject them with something and they'll have a beautiful death, right? Euthanasia. Or what's going to keep someone from saying, well, you know, the quality of life, those people over there, they're just not, they're not having a very good quality of life, okay? They're in a wheelchair,
opinion,
they're in a bed, they have bed sores. Nobody visits them, so let's just knock them off. Well, it happens. Mm-hmm. It happens anyway. But to think that it's inside your legal system is very frightening. That's why everyone has to be
vigilant.
Very, not only vigilant, but vocal.
Yeah.
Okay? Vocal. And there's a wonderful thing called the internet where you can paper these guys with emails until there's no tomorrow. You can call. I hear that the phone lines were just bursting when that other issue came up. So, you know, we have the ability to use these means to communicate with each other and to communicate with our legislators.
You know, the scary thing, too, in Connecticut, once again, you know, it's our legislators who are taking it upon themselves to change our laws, you know, because we voted down the Constitutional Convention. We don't have the ability to get this on the ballot. You know, all the two other states that have physician-assisted suicide, it was voted on by, you know, the people. And, you know, obviously they weren't well
Isn't
informed.
That interesting?
But, you know, it's this, you know, the same thing, civil unions, you know, same-sex marriage. All of this is either through the legislators or through the judicial system in Connecticut. They do not allow the people to speak.
Yes.
So that's why we need to be more vigilant in pushing our legislators that, you know, we are out here and we do not want physician-assisted suicide.
That's
we do
right.
not want the state to say that suicide is ever right.
That's right. That's right. They work for us.
Absolutely.
I think sometimes we forget that. President Obama is our employee.
Yeah.
He's our employee. What's frightening is that the elections do not take into consideration what these people really stand for.
Right.
And that's what happens. So we as Americans, we come from a great heritage of freedom, right? So now's the time. Let freedom ring. Let's go. Let's get our freedom. We need the freedom. Those poor people lying in the beds need the freedom. You know, they have to have people who really understand and love them, like you said, and love them to be able to speak up right now. So that our children, your children, I don't have any, will not have to live in a society where this is allowed.
Well, it's not just the children. I mean, the whole looming issue is the baby boom generation.
Yes.
The baby boom generation didn't have enough kids to keep the social security system going, to keep everything going, you know, even our you know, jobs and everything, the economy. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be facing the baby boom generation, and this is the scary thing. It's trying to get, you know, rid of these people.
Yes, no, I do understand that. There is, like I said, already existing very subtle, and not so subtle, discussions that are held in medical facilities, in doctors' offices, in nursing homes, and maybe even around dinner tables. Encouraging people who are sick to not avail themselves of the full treatment that they could get. Now, I think the Catholics have the mandate to really discuss what it means to die with dignity. Okay? It doesn't mean that we're going to put everybody on a machine and be force feeding them.
Right.
Like a goose. I mean, that's not what's going to happen.
Right.
It means dignity. It means watching them. It means loving them.
Being
it means
with them.
Giving them fluids. It means giving them pain medicine when they need it, not when they don't need
right.
it. So when someone's admitted to the hospice movement and doesn't have much pain, but all of a sudden is put on morphine every 4 hours, why? Why?
My husband's grandfather just went through this. I mean, they called on Monday saying that they were going to put him on hospice, and I was asking the exact same thing. You know, he had stopped eating. And that was the big thing. I mean, he was even 97 years old. He looked like he was in a concentration camp because he was so skinny, but he was like getting extra food because mm-hmm. he was just such a good eater. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it was going, but you know, I guess he stopped chewing or he stopped swallowing. So he would chew and chew and chew and he wouldn't swallow. So they decided to stop feeding him. Mm-hmm. And this was, you know, he was getting weak. Imagine that. Getting food
starving
or water.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting weak. And they were going to put him on morphine. I said, well, is he in any pain? Well, no, but his breathing's erratic. Well, isn't the breathing going to, or isn't the morphine going to stop his breathing? It's like, oh, well, it's just that it looks painful. Painful to him mm-hmm. or painful to you? You know, so.
Well, yes, that's it. And that's why you must know who you're talking to, what their ideas are, and who your doctor is. And never sign one of those DNR forms, but have someone who loves you there,
yeah.
who is your advocate, who is going to make those hard decisions for you, and is going to stand up for you. I get calls all the time from people who say, my aunt's in a nursing home, they don't want to put in an IV, they don't want to do this, they don't, you know, and I lead them through the process.
Right.
You know, like, stand up to them, tell them, you are putting an IV. My aunt is getting fluids. You give that plant over there fluids. You're giving her fluids. Now, you're not going to force feed her if she doesn't want to eat.
Right.
That's a natural way of dying. But you see, it takes a comfortableness with death and with people who aren't perfect. Death sometimes isn't pretty, okay? But if you look at the TV, most people want to be very pretty these days.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, being old is not really very fashionable. So instead, they look like some kind of cartoon
oh
with
gosh.
All those injections. I mean, it is frightening what these women look like.
I
but I'd rather
they have no facial expressions.
The 100-year-old women look much better than they do. But it takes a comfortableness with that process, like the natural process. But as you said before, when you don't have your grandparents living around or your parents, and you're not seeing people get old. You're not comfortable
yeah.
with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the issue is love, caring for people. Of course, that's the primary issue. But sometimes we do have to react to things in our society. And this is very important. I was reading some things about euthanasia over the last few days. I remembered someone had sent me a packet years ago. So I dug it out of my files and I started reading. And I mean, I was fascinated at the origins of euthanasia. Euthanasia was always a good word. Good death, right? Now, what that originally meant was that as a physician, you ensured that your patient had a good death, meaning people were around, the patient was being loved, they were comfortable, they got pain medicine if they needed it, they got what they wanted, they had the
like
sacraments.
They had the sacraments. Yeah.
Now, what did they get? They get like they don't get a priest and they get Reiki done over them.
Ugh.
You know, this is what happens in hospitals. I'm sorry to say, but that's true. Reiki can be given to you without even your being asked. But
Whoa.
You can't have a priest visit you if there's a Catholic priest in the hospital and they see your name is Murphy. They can't just go in there and say,
you
are you Catholic?
You have to sign in blood that you're Catholic and you want
right.
a priest to come before
right.
you're, you know, admitted.
Right. So, you know, there is a whole move against this. But in Germany in the 20s, before Hitler, Hitler's got a bad name, but let me tell you, this all started before he even came around. There were psychiatrists in Germany who decided that many of their patients who were in psychiatric institutions didn't have any quality of life. I guess that meant they didn't go out to, you know, have cocktails at night or read big, long
yeah.
books or something. I don't know. So they decided, you know, they probably shouldn't be around. Okay, so the psychiatrists in the 20s in Germany, led by one. I'm sorry I don't have the name right now, but anybody can Google euthanasia in Germany in the 20s and get it. And what they decided was that they were going to come up with a program to exterminate the unlovable, those who didn't have any quality of life.
In their eyes.
Right. Or maybe in the eyes of everyone else, because maybe they were alone in the institutions. You see, it's that loneliness and lack of love again. So they decided they would exterminate them. And it was actually doctors who came up with the idea of the gas chambers. And they would empty out institutions, put them on buses, and take them to other institutions where they had gas chambers.
Wow.
And they would execute them. And some descriptions, a first-hand description, your mouth is open. Now, first, that's what happened to me. I was like, what? This can't be. But it was true. It was true. That's what happened. And, of course, death was anything but good. Just like anybody who starved, like, Terry Schiavo did not have a happy death.
No.
I mean, she had a good death because she was with God, okay? But it wasn't pleasant. It wasn't painless.
It wasn't dignified.
It wasn't dignified, and neither were the deaths of these people. There was a first-hand description of someone looking through the window at one of these chambers, some converted psychiatrist or attendant there who later wrote about it and said that the looks of pain on the faces of these people as they died, and they were gasping for air. And thousands and thousands and thousands of people were killed that way. So that institutions which had, like, should have had over the course of 10 years 200,000 people ended up having 50,000. All those people were just done away with. And this included adults as well as children, and pediatricians were involved. And it was, Hitler sort of grew up in that atmosphere. So, you know.
And the doctors were already in place.
And the doctors were already in place. Now, we know who their boss was.
Yeah.
The big, you know. So that's the plan, is to just get rid of us. So let's not be surprised here.
Yeah.
But let's do something about it, because we are the army. We're the church militant. Sometimes we forget that militant part. Right? Forget the Easter hats. Let's get out there with the placards, and let's get out there with our money. Let's get out there with our votes and stop this. At least let's let people know what it's all about, or die trying.
That's a really good point. We are going to open the phone lines and ask if anybody wants to call in and ask a question or make a comment. I think the number is 456-6000. So if you have any questions, please call in and ask Dr. Hartnett. I'm sorry, 456-3000. 456-3000. Sorry.
We really do want calls. Right? But it's frightening that this really is happening. But it's not new. It's not new.
Yeah.
It's not new. I mean, it happened in the 20s in Germany and led to something which was even greater.
Worse, I
know. A greater horror.
But, you know, we recognize it. And we sit here and we recognize the evils of that society, and yet we're allowing ourselves to slide right into it.
Well, anybody who knows physics knows the laws of thermodynamics.
Right.
And that's the law of inertia, which is that an object will continue in the same direction unless acted upon by another object. So maybe you and I are the
objects,
right? I'm ready to be that object, you know. But people don't know that. You know, those facts I just told, those are horrifying.
I know.
But this is horrifying.
It is.
This should horrify anybody. The idea that someone who is a living human being would be given medication by a physician who has dedicated his or her life to saving lives is just an abomination. It's an abomination.
I would think that the doctor would have to feel a huge sense of failure to bring themselves, you have a patient come to that, you know, I mean. Obviously, you're saying, well, sorry, doctor, you can't do anything for me, you know. We've not done that.
If the doctor thinks he's God or she is God, then that would be a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, when someone comes to me and says, well, there's doctor, there's nothing you can do. I'm like, I'll get down on my knees right here and pray the rosary with you.
Right.
You know, here's the scapula. Let's get the priest to give you the sacrament of the sick, or bring your minister in, or bring your rabbi in. You know, this is what that's what we have to do, because we believe in eternal life. You know, if you don't believe in eternal life, well, then you have no chance, really. Yeah.
But then I would think you'd want to stay around as long as possible if that's it.
Well, unfortunately, like we said, the society does not like things that aren't perfect. So we have nursing homes where the elderly are basically put away. They're put away, so they're out of the way,
and they're not underfoot
at home anymore.
Yeah.
You know, those who wants those nasty smells. Let's put them in a nursing home, and we can visit grandma every Sunday. Now, I'm not saying that has to happen sometimes. Everyone has to know the limit of their own lives, okay, and what they can do. And there are lovely places, nursing homes, where patients are taken care of beautifully. I would say most of them get excellent care by the nurses, okay? But still, those people are marginalized.
Yeah.
Okay? It's marginalization of people who are good, living people, be they Catholic or Protestant or Jewish or atheist or whoever. We got to love them. That's what Jesus would do. Jesus was all about giving
the least
life back.
Of their people, yeah.
Well, taking away the marginalization, putting those marginalized back in the center, right? Curing the woman with the issue of blood so she wouldn't be marginalized and couldn't go out anymore, or bringing them back into society. That's what he was all about. You know, it wasn't about healing you to make you feel good.
Right.
It was about healing you to teach somebody something, to bring you back. That's what it was about. And that's what we have to be about. So this mentality of killing people who are dying is really an antichrist mentality.
Absolutely.
There's no question about that.
We have a caller, Christian from Wyndham. Hello, Christian.
Yes. I'm very concerned about the removal of the conscience clause for doctors, and how would that affect a physician? Would he be forced to assist someone in suicide, even against his conscience?
That's a good question.
Well, that's a very good question. And as it stands now, we still have the conscience clause in effect, although our president is doing everything he can to get that taken away. And right
now, the conscience clause was enacted through HHS that said that a physician cannot, or nurse, cannot be discriminated against if they choose not to participate in things that they find objectionable to their own conscience, including birth control, abortion, and apparently euthanasia, I would imagine, would be on that list.
Yes. And so if that's removed, and again, we don't know how these laws will play out. Okay. Just because there's a law that will say that you're allowed to get physician-assisted suicide, will that law also state that any physician you ask has to be part of it? Or will the law say just if you're a physician who happens to like killing people, you can be part of it? I don't know what it will say. But certainly if it was codified in such a way that it was insurance companies, that your insurance carrier, your health insurance carrier allowed it, it was paid for by federal funds, then physicians would be forced to carry out procedures if there were no conscience clause. So you are right to be concerned, and thank you for being concerned for us, because I'm very concerned as a physician, and I did everything I could to have that not happen, and spoke about it at our group. We had people come speaking about it, and I tried to tell as many doctors as possible. But, you know, that inertia thing really does affect most of us. It does.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's amazing to me that, you know, in this day and age, when a child who is offended by the word God and the Pledge of Allegiance, can choose not to say the Pledge of Allegiance, and yet a physician or a nurse can't choose not to do something that is so objectionable that it goes again. We're going to drive moral people out of medicine.
Or underground.
Yeah.
They'll have a physician network, just like in Serbia, in Croatia, when the communists came in, when it was the old Yugoslavia, the priests couldn't wear their clerical garb, and they couldn't be identified as priests. So they used to call priests uncle instead of father. So if they'd answer to uncle, you'd know it was a priest. You'd go around the basement and have a mass. You know, maybe it will come to that. I don't know. I can tell you that something has to jar the Catholic healthcare workers into action.
Yeah, it's not just Catholics that are against, you know, a euthanasia or abortion. You know, they're just, you know, good Christian people.
Of course, but let's start there anyway.
Yeah. We have another caller, Anne from Storrs. Hello, Anne. Hello, Anne.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question.
Sure.
Is there any criteria that we as friends and family members can look for when visiting our loved ones in the dying process? For instance, we might be told that they can't swallow, but they can't have an IV because they're retaining fluid, even though we notice that they might still be putting out urine. And if they are unable to process it, can't they still have sips of water or something without making them uncomfortable? And how can we kind of be there and look at what's going on and see if maybe they're doing something wrong?
Excellent question.
I think, Anne, you hit on something very important, and that's, number one, you have to be there. Because in your gut, you're going to know what's right and wrong. Number two, our Holy Father, John Paul, stated very succinctly that anybody should be given fluid, okay? Fluid. If that means an IV or that means orally, they need to be given fluid. And so that's very important to know. So you have to fight, Anne. You can't give up when people tell you no, because there will be people telling you no. I have had many instances where I've met up against that force. The doctor says, "Well, we don't give people like this IVs," or they're in a hospice. They signed on to hospice, which will sure give you plenty of morphine, but will not want to give you fluid. So who's controlling what's going on? And the answer is the patient and their family and God have to control what's going on. That means somebody has to be there. That means someone has to be watching. That means you have to be aware of your Catholic principles, ethical principles, and fight for them. So it is not comfortable, Anne, because here you are a lay person going to a doctor, having a family
right.
meeting at a nursing home and saying, I want my family member to be given an IV. And they'll look at you like you're, you know, who are you? We know. And they'll give you all kinds of answers.
Yeah,
but
like
it's,
you're
go
making
ahead.
Them uncomfortable if you give them that. They're drowning in themselves. Or
yes. Well, anybody should get water is basically the bottom line. And your church teaches you that. So that's all you really have to say. Well, my church says that we must give water to people who are dying. Now, does this mean you have to put an IV into your 90-year-old grandmother who's dying? Of course not. If she's able to take fluids and then suddenly she isn't, and she's actively in the dying process, which anybody who really understands people knows what that is. That is not a mysterious thing. People don't one minute be talking to you like this and the next minute be dead, unless they're having some kind of a cardiac arrhythmia or a heart attack or something like that. The dying process is slow and it's unique and to every person. But if there's family there, then you know it. So you're not going to cause any pain to your loved one either. But you have to be there. Because remember, institutions have their rules. They are not loving people with a heart that beats.
They don't have the time. They don't have the people.
They have to have rules and they
yeah.
have policies.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean the policies are according to what you believe and what your church says you must enact, okay? It's not an option. But you have to be there. You have to be there. So, and everybody knows that. Everybody knows when that is. So do we have to put an IV in every single person? No. If someone's actively dying and they're, you know, 80, 90 years old and they just having little sips, fine. That's great. The Lord's probably taking them. But that requires someone to be there who's loving them, because institutions will not do that. And if they take over the role, they're going to make decisions, which unfortunately are expedient many times. Now, not always. I don't want to vilify the medical profession, because there are loving doctors and nurses of all faiths who are there to just love people through every circumstance. But you know when something's wrong, Anne, and you must speak up for your individual who's in the institution.
You mentioned getting morphine but not getting fluids. I would think, you know, if you're not getting fluids, your circulatory system's going to be shutting down. How are you going to get morphine to your pain centers that
that's a very good question. You know, until your blood pressure stops, then your heart's circulating blood. So if you're given morphine, then it's going to get pumped around. But what's it doing? Are you really having pain, or is it just to accelerate the dying process?
And if you're not getting fluids, it's going to be much more concentrated.
Yes,
and
these
more
kinds of things, though, are so unique. Every situation is unique. So you really can't come up with a blanket statement.
I know, that's I think, scares people.
It does scare people.
And I think
people.
Anne had a really good question. How do you know? I mean...
Yes, you know because you know. I've been with hundreds of people who die. You know when someone's dying. You know. But it takes someone to be there.
Right.
You also know what your church teaches. It's our obligation to learn what our church teaches. That's why we have the magisterium. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's why we have the catechism. That's why we have wonderful Orthodox priests who can teach us these things. So we have to know what our church teaches. And that's a really good way to live. If you go by that.
Absolutely.
It's very reasonable.
Takes the guesswork out.
It's very reasonable. Yes, it is. It takes the guesswork out.
Again, the number here is 456-3000, 456-3000. I was going to ask you with regard to one of the things that was going through this, the suicide, assisted suicide thing was life insurance. Now, if a person has life insurance, if any other time they commit suicide, it makes their insurance null and void. Mm-hmm. I would hope that would be the case, too, prevent people from committing suicide.
Well, maybe it's the reason it didn't pass in Connecticut, since we're the home of life insurance. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be cynical like that. I don't want to be cynical, but... just a little joke and a very heavy discussion. I don't know, but everything, I am a little bit cynical when it comes to money and when it comes to the gospel of death, because I pretty much know that anything they can do to make money, they're going to make money.
Right.
So if that means letting people die sooner, it's enough to pay.
Pay for health care, but they'll pay for...
Right. Or, you know, who? I don't know. I don't know anything about the insurance, the life insurance industry. But it is another interesting question. And I'm sure there are many more questions. Like, who do you ask? Who does this person talk to who's making this decision?
Right.
You know, who do you talk to? Do you talk to just the person? Do you talk to their family members, children, their aunts, their uncles? How do you make a decision
like that? The form that a person would fill out is a checkbox, whether or not they actually contacted anybody in their family. And I think that's the scariest thing, is that it says, no, I have not contacted my family. Mm. And there would be no obligation for the physician to contact the family.
Oh, because everybody has the right.
Privacy.
Right, the right to privacy. I mean, you know what that does.
Yeah, I know.
Now I am not even allowed to tell, you know, a family member, a parent, that their child comes in and you know, just had a miscarriage, who's the 14-year-old kid. You know, I mean, that's what happens. If this child comes in alone, you know, we're supposed to just let it happen, you know.
Even if it could have been a rape.
Well, of course. Of course, and if you find out about that, if you find out that it was, then you have to report it.
Right.
But the point is, where do you draw the line? But here in in this world. We are not a Catholic world. We're a world that, unfortunately, is controlled most of the time by very intelligent, educated, intellectual people like those legislators who
proposed
this bill. Now, who's behind them, I would like to know. You know, let's not vilify the one person.
Right.
Who's behind that? Who's behind this movement of death? You know, I ultimately, we know who's behind it. And I think, you know, I am a little bit cynical about that because I see all these things around me that are promoting death. And here I am, a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, I'm supposed to be supporting life. So at this point, hey, I just go in and make people laugh and give them holy cards and you know, say God bless you and pray for them and have masses for them. And it's just an unbelievable place to be living right now for a Catholic.
It was sad because a couple of years ago, my mom's cousin was dying of breast cancer, and she had chosen not to get any kind of treatment. She just decided, you know, she was going to, you know, forego all of the, because it was pretty bad and she felt it was futile. Anyways, so it came to the point where her son put her in a hospice, and my mom flew out to New Mexico right away. No, Arizona, sorry. Right away and stayed with her. And the staff couldn't believe, you know, they were laughing and they were playing games and they were, you know, doing all sorts of stuff. You know, my aunt looked, or my cousin, her cousin looked totally terrible. But, you know, and she was literally dying, but they were living.
Of course,
to the last
because she's
moment.
Alive.
And what shocked me is that wasn't going on in all the other rooms. And that stunned my mother as well, you know. I mean, they talked about their childhoods. They talked about, you know, their family. And my her cousin tried to teach her how to play cards. And if that didn't kill her, nothing will. But, you know, she helped her live to the very end.
Yes.
And that is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yes, that is what we're supposed to be doing. Yes. We are not in charge. God's in charge. We have little duties that we have to do for him. And that's what we're supposed to be doing, is loving people.
Yeah.
Whether they're 22 and beautiful or 75 and, you know, dying, or they're, you know, in the uterus. We're supposed to be loving them.
Yeah.
And each other, by the way.
Yeah.
Like these people who end up opting for death, who are the people who sign these assisted suicide things? Who are they?
Yeah.
Who are the patients?
Yeah.
This is what I'd like to know. Are they the people who have been living alone all these years and have nobody around them? Is this a chronic depression that they're
right.
in? See, I would assume that were the case. And I would want to bring them into a loving environment.
Right.
And that's where the healing would take place.
And the thing, too, is that it was a beautiful gift that my mom's cousin gave to her.
Of course.
Because my mom was just so touched that, you know, to be there, you know, to the very end with her and to just to experience that with her. And she, you know, she's so grateful that she had that opportunity, you know. And here, like you say, we kind of stockpile people in nursing homes and leave them. And
that's what happens. We stockpile them in the nursing homes. We send our kids off to school, and they're not in our lives. You know, all of this. All of this. Let's
institutionalize
put
everything.
The responsibility on somebody else instead of learning and enjoying it.
Yeah. Here we have another caller, Sue from Willimantic. Hello, Sue.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Sue from Willimantic.
Hi, Sue.
I had a question. If President Obama has lifted the conscience clause on a federal level, is there something that states can do, individual states, on a state level to protect individuals?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I think that, yes, that it can be opposed on a state level. However, you'll be interested to know that Attorney General Blumenthal actually went to Washington to try to oppose the conscience clause, the federal conscience clause that was in that HHS?
HHS.
HHS regulation that President Bush attempted to solidify before he left office. Blumenthal actually went to Washington to oppose that. I don't know if other state attorneys general did that.
Yeah, there were a couple others.
He did that. So
I don't see the Conscience Clause coming to Connecticut anytime soon.
We may have to move to South Dakota or something where people still are thinking clearly.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I don't know, or somewhere, maybe Prince Edward Island where there's never been an abortion.
Me.
I don't know, somewhere like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no choice. It's not, you know, stop saying that they're pro-choice because they're not pro-choice. They are pro-death and there's no question about it.
Yes, let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
Let's call it what it is. Let's not put these euphemisms around it.
Because you don't have a choice to opt out. You only have to be forced to do whatever they want you to do.
But in our world, that's not the way it is. It's very worldly. You know, we're talking otherworldly here. To do, people have to be educated and loved and supported and know that they can make a difference. It's very easy to say, I can't do anything about it. I remember when I was young, and I would say that to my father. Well, Dad, I can't do anything about it. I can't make a difference. He would get so angry with me. Yes, you can make a difference. You can go out and vote. You can change. And he's still like that today. You can go out. These people voted in that president.
You know, the sad thing is not only that we can make a difference, but we're obligated to make a difference.
Yes.
Because if we sit back and allow this to happen, then we're just as guilty as anyone else who's pushing for any of these things.
Yes.
So it's our country and it's our responsibility because we're in a democracy. If we were in, you know, a dictatorship, then, you know, we could just wash our hands of it. You know, we can't do anything about it. But this is our country and we have a say. And if we're not standing up for the least among us, we're
then
just
what are
as
we
bad.
Doing? Because we're getting older.
Ah.
Okay.
Yeah.
If we don't stand up for these fetuses right now, okay, or the embryos, our frozen brothers and sisters, okay, if we don't stand up for them, then who's going to stand up for us when we're in the nursing home, unconscious, you know, maybe we just had a stroke, and maybe we do know what's going on, okay, but maybe we don't. Who's going to stand up for us? We're just going to be pushed aside also. Remember, we already have hundreds of thousands of frozen brothers and sisters.
Right.
Okay.
That are going to be experimented
freezers
on. Yeah.
Somewhere. Okay. Let's talk about that. I mean, talk about death. That's the ultimate cruelty, you know, that suspended life. What is that like? You know, people don't think about that either.
Yeah.
But we have to talk about what it is. It's just like abortion. I made people at work look at that abortion film that was that was around on the internet a while ago. There was a film made by an actor who had been in one of those movies, those pro-life movies, and he had a film out on the internet which showed abortions and what happened in abortions, what it looked like. And I made people, I was working one night, and I had seen it. It was after Benedict Rochelle had said, I had to watch it. I had to sit down and watch it. And I said, if an old man can watch it, I'm going to watch it. So I watched it. And it put a fire in my belly more than there is now. Okay? And so I went to work. And as I was sitting there, I was thinking, am I going to ask those people to watch it? Am I going to? And I said, you bet I am going to ask them. And I went and got a Catholic woman. And I said, you have to watch this. And I knew she was kind of like going to Mass and going to confession and stuff like that. And abortion. And I knew she was on the fence about her vote. This was right before the election. So I took her down. I said, you really have to watch this. And I sat her down by a computer, and I turned that on. And she just started weeping.
Wow.
And she said, I will never. It changed her vote, okay? And she said, I will never be able to think about abortion the same way. It puts a reality to it. You see, that people need reality. And I think what this bill is doing, it kind of wants to put that Vaseline over the lens of reality. Okay, let's not really die. Let's just let you fade out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's always, I mean, whenever you usurp God's will, is when everything goes literally to hell. You know, the human embryonic stem cells, you know, we only have it because, oh, you know, somebody decided, well, we should have in vitro fertilization. You know, we have we have contraception. Well, because you have contraception, you need abortion. Mm-hmm. Well, you got abortion, we're missing 50 million people who would be paying into the social security system and buying our goods and services. And, oh, now we're going to have to kill off all of the baby boomers because we don't have enough people to support them. I mean, it's all one big gummish of
And pretty soon Satan will be really happy and there'll be no people around. He just doesn't want us to be in heaven. He wouldn't mind if we're with him, I think. Okay,
the sooner the better.
Right, but people are asleep. You know, I had a dream once. I'll share it with you, because I was in a bus and I pulled up outside this old church, which was all stone, and there was a big wall, and I walked into the church. And as I went through the door, I looked, and there were all the pews were filled with people, and everyone was covered with cobwebs, like Miss Havisham and that whatever book that is, I forget. You know, it was cobwebs, and I often think of that dream. I said, "Here we are. That's the church. Most of it, not us here, not the people calling in, not the people who are going to listen to this. But how do we get to the others?
Yeah.
Okay, how do we just wake them up? Maybe this will wake them up." Okay, maybe this will wake them up. I never lose hope, because there's always something we can do to wake them up.
I think there is hope. I know with the 1098, where the bishops really mobilized people in a very quick fashion. I'm hoping that they will also mobilize people when this bill comes back up in committee, so that we can get people down to Hartford and protest it, and support life and not. Support suicide. Anytime the state decides to support suicide, that is the nail in the coffin.
It's a very hackneyed expression, the slippery slope.
Ugh.
But the slippery slope is just covered with blood, you know?
Yeah.
And that's very slippery blood, you know? And we've been spilling a lot of it in this country over the years. So, you know, that this is happening is no surprise. But we can't lose hope. We have to have hope. We hope.
And that's true for anyone who's facing death.
Yes.
There's hope. And we need to, death is just a process, part of life. And so long as we follow God's will, it's going to be, the best possible death.
It's going to be eternal life.
Yeah.
Going to be with him. People think I'm crazy. I said, I'm ready. I to meet Jesus. Wow. They think you're crazy, because they really don't think of it as real. I think reality is that we're going to live one day with Jesus if we fulfill the Father's will, right?
Right.
So that's the reality. That's so beautiful. That's it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope we have inspired people to go out and try to stop this bill, along with other things that might come up in the life issues. Thank you for joining us today. We hope that you've learned something. We hope that you tell your family and friends about the things that you've learned. Get the discussion going. Talk about how we want our family, our loved ones, to die with dignity. And that doesn't mean by taking our own lives. We want to be there with our family as they go through the process of death. We hope that when you look in the mirror the next time, you realize that yours too is the face of pro-life. Please join us again next time.